Salvation Hour. This is your host, Marshall.
And this is Jennifer.
This is Michael.
And Michael's not the Michael of last episode. He was not able to attend this episode, but we have a fan of the show who emailed me and expressed an interest in making an appearance on the show. I thought that was kind of a novel idea. So here he is, Michael from Chicago, right?
That's correct.
And, well, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Welcome.
And, you are, how would you describe yourself religiously currently?
I would say I'm a dogmatic agnostic. You know, I don't believe we can prove or disprove the idea of a deity, although I must say when it comes to the God of the Judeo-Christian scriptures, I'm pretty much an atheist.
Yes, I would agree with you on that. Although, what you just said, there are a lot of people who would be a little upset with you for not willing to go the entire distance and say, there is no God. I'm not one of those individuals. I really don't care.
But I have encountered those people of whom you speak.
Yeah, I have too. I don't get it personally.
Right.
And not that I think that they're wrong in their decisiveness or how strong their beliefs are, because they're probably right. I'm pretty sure there is not a God. I'm also with you, though. I think on the same level that Richard Dawkins isn't willing to definitively say that there is no God, I'm kind of at the same level.
Same here.
So ultimately, I don't know if it really matters to me.
Right.
I mean, if God wants it to matter to me, he'll provide me some evidence of his existence other than a 2,000-year-old book filled with addictions.
That condones slavery.
Condones slavery and, yeah, a whole bunch of other really nasty, evil stuff. So, God, that's your mission. You want me? I'll need a little bit more proof. And, you know, I honestly, when I made my deconversion, I spent a lot of time praying to this God that I was pretty sure no longer existed and just saying, listen, I just need some evidence. I'm on your side if you could, you know, give me a clue as to your existence. And I know, Jennifer, you didn't go through that process because you were never religious at all.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I had a point in time when I felt almost guilty that I didn't believe, mostly because I had certain family members who really wanted me to. But ultimately, I was like, I didn't go through I'm going to pray to God to tell him, you know, to have him tell me that he's real or anything like
yeah.
that. So.
It's so stupid when you think about it.
Mostly I would just sit there and think, what if I'm wrong? So I maybe went through that for a while, but nothing
whole,
too major.
The whole Pascal's Wager phase.
Yeah, yes.
Which, you know, a lot of atheists and agnostics ridicule that argument, and I do too, because it's a stupid argument.
Yeah.
But it's an effective argument. I mean, I know people, I think, remain religious longer than I would have if I didn't have that little seed of doubt in my mind that I wasn't going to burn in hell for all eternity when I died.
Well, I mean, that argument really preys on impressionable and vulnerable people. I mean, it was one of many reasons why I first became a Christian, and one of many reasons why I remained one for over a decade. I mean, it wasn't the only reason, as I said, it's one of many.
Yeah, and
I was going to say, you know, but I guess for me, it's like, especially when you're young, it works fairly well too, I think. But once you get a little bit older and you start thinking, well, what if I choose this god and I'm wrong about this other one? So you're just kind of screwed no matter what.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of that, Jennifer, I don't know if you've seen these cars recently, but I've seen a lot of cars with these huge, obnoxious yellow bumper stickers saying, ignoring Jesus is choosing to go to hell on them. Have you seen those?
I haven't seen those.
I don't know if they've made their way to Chicago, but I see them in Olathe, Kansas constantly. There must be a church in Olathe handing those out. And it just drives me crazy. I would personally like to get one saying, ignoring Jesus / Muhammad / Vishnu / or, and just forever. And you're choosing to hell. Go to hell. I mean, it's such an absurd argument, and it's their way of saying, "Hey, you go to hell. It's your fault." Kind of a blaming the victim mentality. But I can't believe you haven't seen those, because I see them probably every other day, and they're just obnoxious. And it also makes me think how a lot of times you hear Christians criticizing atheists for kind of being too assertive in their beliefs, and obnoxious, and you know, with the American Atheist Organization putting up some billboards that I thought were pushing the line a little bit, but they're nothing compared to bumper stickers, which are literally saying, "If you don't believe in my God, you deserve to be tortured forever." You know?
Well, right. I mean, that's one of the main duties of a Christian believer is to be assertive. I mean, scream it from the rooftops, but you know, that's, you know, so it's kind of funny that they would criticize another group of people for being too assertive.
Yeah. And it happens all the time.
Sure.
I mean, as like I was talking about those American Atheist billboards, I don't know where I stand on those sayings where, you know, it's a myth. And there was another one. I kind of liked them, but I kind of didn't. But they don't even come close to the stuff we see daily from the Christians. You know, like the church signs.
Right.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how
burn
many.
Or burn.
Yeah, I don't know how many times in my life that I've been threatened with hell, just driving to work. You know, seeing those signs on a regular basis or the billboards. But anyway. So, Michael, you spent 10 years of your life as a Christian?
Yeah, just over 10 years. I became a Christian during my college years. And, you know, I don't want to sound too long-winded, but just to sum it up, you know, like many college students, for many reasons, I was impressionable and vulnerable, and It's really my firm conviction that evangelical fundamentalist religion, in particular evangelical fundamentalist Christianity, really preys on people who are, you know, as I said, impressionable, vulnerable, longing for something to belong to. And I mean, you know, it's advertised basically. This will give you what you're missing in life. This will give you purpose. One of the main things that appealed to me is, you know, the constant rambling on about an afterlife. I mean, you're made to feel that you're part of this elite group that's headed to heaven, while all the rest of the sons of bitches who are partying and having a good time in life, you know, they're headed for hell. You know, so it's a way to give you one up on all the people who are having a good time in life. And you know, I just look back on my life and I can't believe how all the lies I told myself, the lies I believed from other people. And, you know, I was a true believer. I know some people would say, oh, you were never a believer in the first place because a believer can't lose their salvation. But
oh,
you know,
God.
My response to them, you know, if they're right, how do they know that they were quote unquote saved? I mean, they might be just like me, you know? So, and in fact, actually I know, Marshall, you know I used to live in Kansas City. Jennifer, I also used to live in Kansas City. I went to KU and spent some time in KC after I graduated. But for half a semester, I was a student at the Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City. So, you know.
Why just half a semester?
Oh, well, I was, you know, that was back in 2002, so it's not like I dropped out because I, you know, I left the faith. I was very much a believer, but to be honest, I mean, I just, I hated it, and it just, for, you know, it just wasn't for me, you know. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of a long story, but, you know, I mean, I could talk about it more some other time. But, yeah, it just, it wasn't a good mix. I was still a conservative Christian then, but even those people were, oh, man.
I mean, well, and that goes back to the promise of heaven. And one reason that it doesn't appeal to me is that I went to the seminary, and that was the seminary. You were there for half a semester, and you were like, I can't spend any more time with these people. I got to get out of here. Can you imagine an eternity of that?
Yeah, just what I want to do, spend eternity with those people and Jerry Falwell and Pat Roberts.
Oh, God.
I think I'd want to go to hell then.
Yeah.
That sounds more like hell than anything.
I know. Just got better weather.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, I'm glad to see that you are no longer a fundamentalist evangelical Christian.
Glad to be here.
And again, I was a former Catholic. I spent 8 years in the seminary. They weren't wasted years, and I kind of enjoyed myself, but I can honestly, I have a close friend who's still Catholic, and I tell him, I don't know how you're still a Catholic, man, because he's a decent guy.
Okay.
But I just do not, for the life of me, understand how anyone remains a Catholic, given what we know about the church. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, and I would assume, especially because of, you know, because don't you guys actually learn, like, actual history and things like that? I mean, I wasn't 100% sure, but you know, I would just think learning the history would just be enough for most people to go, wait a minute.
Yes. Well, and we did. And there was, in my education, there was never any attempt by the professors to, at least not the history professors or the science professors, to curb what they taught us to the church teachings. I mean, they didn't even care. A lot of them weren't even Catholics, to be honest with you.
One thing, Marshall, now, when I was, you know, when I was in my back of my religious days, I oftentimes proclaimed the Catholic Church as a cult and the Whore of Babylon, according to Revelation 17. I was, you know, pretty anti-Catholic. But I look back at it now, and I just, how stupid of me to say things like that, because the Catholic Church, for, you know, years, was the only expression of Christianity. I mean, and, you know, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, as an outsider, you know, I realize, yeah, there's some really weird belief systems in the Catholic Church, but I don't think it's any more weird than what I used to believe as a fundamentalist Christian. In fact, I think some of the things some of the batshit crazy things I believed as a fundamentalist Christian were a whole hell of a lot crazier than anything the Catholic Church believes.
Yeah, that'd be quite a competition, because they both believe in some really crazy shit. But anyway, hey, on our last episode, and Michael, you weren't here for that, but I can't remember the exact conversation, but apparently at some point I had mentioned that masturbation, according to Catholic Church, was just as evil as murder. And I printed out the email and I can't find it, but Franklin, and I don't have his email address, and I wouldn't give it out even if I did, emailed me and basically said that that was ridiculous. He was a former Catholic, said that was ridiculous, that as much as he disliked the Catholic Church, they certainly don't teach that masturbation is as bad as murder. And in a sense that he is correct. I want to make a bit of a clarification. He's correct in the sense that from a social standpoint, no one in the Catholic Church feels that masturbators should be locked up or potentially, well, the Catholic Church is against capital punishment, but they don't believe it should be a crime. And it's certainly treated much different than murder. But at the same time, masturbation is a mortal sin for which, if you die with a mortal sin on your conscience, on your soul, you go to hell.
And there's, right, right. And so, well, and the Catholics aren't the only one that believe that, I don't
right.
think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my religious background, they heavily condemned masturbation. I mean, it's Oh, man. I mean, the Catholic Church isn't the only sexually repressive institution. And, you know, I have a good friend of mine who's a devout Catholic who's actually raised in the Nazarene Church and formerly converted to Catholicism. And, I mean, he follows the Pope's orders straight out of Rome. And he's heavily against masturbation. I mean, the Catholic Answers radio program, they, you know, it's an hour-long show on weekdays where they have questions and answers, and they defend the Catholic Church. I mean, you go to their website, go to the Q&A, they heavily frown on masturbation. So while they may not think of it as a crime, they're definitely against it.
Well, and they still teach. They don't go around promoting this teaching or bringing it up all that often, but they still teach. You masturbate, and you have a heart attack right after that, you're going straight to hell. It doesn't matter. You've got a mortal sin on your soul. You're screwed. You better get to confession as soon as you can. And by that standpoint, well, and they don't have, according to Catholic theology, there is no masturbator's hell, which is less horrible than the murderer hell and the adulterer hell and the arsonist hell. It's all the same thing. So in that sense, yes, the Catholic Church does teach that it's just as evil and bad as murder. And I think that was my point when I said that last show. Because, yeah, I mean, the guy's correct. They don't want, you know, laws in place to arrest masturbators. And so anyway, I just wanted to clarify that. I still claim that I'm right, but I understand why a person would find what I said a little bit confusing.
Well, you know, and think about it, the Catholic Church, you know, their view really is pretty in line with what the Bible even says. I mean, the words in Matthew 6, you know, I think it's part of the Sermon on the Mount. I can't remember if it's Matthew 6 or Jesus says, and who knows, you know, again, I'm not convinced Jesus said everything that's attributed to him in the Gospels, but the words attributed to Jesus, at least in the Gospel of Matthew, he says, if you lusted a woman, you've committed adultery in your heart. But I mean, you know, right then and there, you know, it's equating lusting after someone in your mind with committing adultery. Now, I think that's, you know, I think that's totally ridiculous. I mean, thinking someone's really hot, you know, and you're like, screw them, just think that in your mind. That's not, it doesn't have the same consequences as actually screwing them. You know, I mean, it's just the reason there is just ridiculous.
Well, and that's what Christopher Hitchens refers to as this, the, you know, concept of a thought crime that Christians and religious, not just Christians, the Muslims as well, are so heavily into, that you are held accountable not just for your actions, but for your very thoughts. Just by thinking about sinning can in and of itself be a sin.
Right. And there's scripture to back that up as well. I mean, in that same chapter, or close to that chapter, I mean, Jesus says, if you call your brother an amber, you know, you have anger in your heart, you know, you're worthy of hell.
Which is just absurd.
Yeah.
So the concept of thought crime and just that. And, you know, when I was growing up as a teenager and in the seminary, I was terrified of those errant thoughts that could, you know, have me in hell. Oh, gosh, I thought for a second that maybe there really isn't a God. Oh, my God, get that under control, Marshall. You're going to go straight to hell if you think that again. I would, you know, in a sense, I lived in terror of thinking the wrong thing. And, God, you wouldn't know the emotional stress I went under if I actually masturbated when I was a kid. I thought I was some sort of freak, and I couldn't believe that I let God down so bad. And this notion of this infinite being in heaven spying on me and keeping track of the number of times I masturbate, you know, is so absurd. But it seems so real to me.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? I mean, if there is a supreme being, don't you think he has a lot more important things to worry about, such as genocide and whatever, than some kid in America masturbating? I mean, it's unbelievably ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's a result of the omnipresence. You know, maybe he ticks off because he's like, I'm omnipresent. I can't turn around and not be here. Damn it! Stop it!
His mind is just flooded with images of people masturbating and doing all sorts of things, and he can't turn it off.
Right, right. Well, that's why it's a punishment. It's not because it's bad. It's because he's like, I just don't want to see it anymore. Stop it.
And he's up there like, why did I even make that an option? This is driving me crazy. You know? It's just so stupid. But, you know, it seemed so real to me when I was younger that I honestly thought I was some sort of demonic freak because I did what every other kid my age was doing probably on a daily basis. So anyway, not big in the Catholic Church anymore. I wanted to talk about some local news. Yesterday, Jennifer, even though you weren't there, we had the second godless pistol waivers, which is, Michael, since you're no longer from this area, occasionally we get together. There's some gun owners in our local meetup groups, and we get together and shoot our guns.
Okay, cool.
And it was kind of fun. It was a lot of fun. It's really hot.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry I missed it, but I had, other things came up and birthdays, and I was like, oh, well, I guess birthdays are, you know, once a year, so.
No, I understand. And I think we're going to have more in the future. It's fun. I think one Christian accused us of trying to form a militia or something like that.
Be thankful, at least as far as gun rights go, be thankful that you live in, be thankful that you don't live in Illinois, because Illinois, we have some of the, especially in the Chicago area, in the city of Chicago itself, we have some of the most restrictive gun laws in the nation, you know, and guess what, you know, Chicago has one of the highest crime rates.
Yeah, I know.
That goes to show you how much gun control laws really work.
Well, because all it does is keep guns. And I don't want to make this into an hour of gun rights and NRA stuff. Right. But I agree with you. When you outlaw, as the cliche goes, when you outlaw guns, all you do is, you know, all you're really doing is keeping guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens. Right. You know, nobody who is willing to rob a bank is going to be deterred by the fact that he's not allowed to own the gun.
Right.
You know?
Well, I was going to say, even if, you know, if at that point, you know, even if they're legal to own, do you really think somebody robbing a bank is going to procure a legal weapon? No.
Yeah. So, but anyway, we had fun. There was, and this kind of ties in with what I was going to talk about with the Black Atheist of Atlanta. There was a libertarian there. Turns out he was a Christian. He was invited by one of our fellow members. And he was going on about his opposition to gay marriage, and basically he said marriage has always been defined as an institution between a man and a woman for the creation of a family. If you change the definition, well, all chaos is going to break out. Words are just going to mean whatever you want them to mean. And that was essentially his argument.
You know, we change the definitions of words all the time. It's not like words in our language mean the same thing throughout all of time and space, number one. And number two, I always take issue with that when people say, well, the point of marriage is the formation of a family. I'm like, no, it's not. The point of marriage was always a political or social contract. It's never actually, it's only been within the last maybe 100 years that it's been about love and family and all that kind of stuff, but before then it's always been a political or social contract.
Well, yeah, and even if you, just because you allow gays and lesbians to get married doesn't mean that you have to strip the importance of family to married couples. I mean, you can be a heterosexual couple and still have children, believe it or not, if gays are allowed to marry. It changes absolutely nothing. And the odd thing is he went on to say that he was fine with laws, you know, the civil unions. He was perfectly fine with that. He just didn't want them to be considered married. And what I didn't say, and I wish I'd said, is that, you know, okay, what if two guys decide to form a civil union. They go to their local courthouse, they sign the paperwork, and now they have a civil union. And then they decide to refer to each other as being married. Are you going to arrest them at that point? I mean, how are you going to stop doing that?
Right. Well, you know, when people start, you know, sounding the alarm that, you know, allowing homosexual marriage or even homosexual civil unions is going to destroy the integrity of marriage, I always think to myself, and I chuckle, you know, people, heterosexual people are destroying the institution of marriage already. I mean, look at the divorce rate. I mean, the divorce rate is 5 out of 10. Even in the Christian church, I mean, the divorce, I mean, it's been said, not just said, I mean, the Barna group, which is a Christian polling group, they, their statistics say that, and they're pretty reliable, their statistics say that the divorce rate among Christians is, you know, is not all that different from that of the quote-unquote world. So, I mean, it's not like heterosexuals statistically aren't, you know, regarding the institution of marriage as sacred anyway. So,
yeah.
That's always been my argument, too. I'm like, you know, it seems to me that there's plenty of straight people who, in my opinion, just kind of poo all over the institution of marriage to begin with. So what's the big deal?
I'm surprised that, you know, you said this guy identified himself as a libertarian, Marshall?
Yeah, but also a devout Christian.
Okay. No, because I mean, you know, I don't always like labels, but I would identify myself as a libertarian in most areas. I mean, no one is I don't think anyone is 100% consistent libertarian, but, you know, libertarians usually believe, you know, I can't speak for them all, but usually believe that the government should, you know, stay out of marriage. That should be left to private institutions such as churches. So I don't know. I'm surprised that this guy would identify himself as a libertarian and then have that view. But, you know, as you said, he's also a devout Christian, so that's probably where that comes
from. And I'm all for him being allowed to be in a church that opposes gay marriage.
Sure.
That's his right.
Sure.
Right. But you're right. If you're a fan of limited government and a fan of not allowing government to dictate morality and tell you what you can and cannot do, then you really have no basis for saying that government should prevent gay and lesbian couples from getting married.
Sure.
So, and you know, and sometimes I think that that the line between the gay issue and the non-believer issue kind of gets blurred. And I would like to avoid that, but it's so difficult sometimes because it's always the religious people. Well, not always, but usually the religious people who are so hard on the homosexual community. But believe it or not, there are a lot. In fact, I'm pretty certain the majority of homosexual couples are, in fact, theists of some variety.
I could believe that.
So they're not the same issue. And they would be that community would be the first to admit that. But still, I think whenever we do see oppression, particularly oppression justified by religion, that's an opportunity for us to speak out on the behalf of the people who are being oppressed. And I think that there's absolutely no doubt that that's been the objective or one of the objectives of the Christian and the Abrahamic religions for a very long time, is to oppress that minority. Well, oppress a lot of minorities.
Right.
I was going to say just oppress any natural human behaviors in general, I think.
Oppress having fun. People who want to have fun.
Yeah.
Just oppress them.
Right. Right. Religion, making life miserable for thousands of years.
Yes, exactly. All right. Hey, speaking of, and that discussion kind of segues into what another thing I wanted to talk about briefly is the Black atheist community in Atlanta, which I really like. I follow their Facebook page, and I'm a big fan of them, but they have a couple of very vocal members who make those similar arguments. That definitional one that we just talked about, that homosexuality has always been defined as a relationship between a man, marriage has always been defined as a relationship between a man and a woman, and we can't change that or chaos will break out. Because literally the argument I heard made is once we do agree to do that, well, then we've just removed all meaning from language, and then words will just mean whatever we want them. Chaos will break out, which is absurd. It's an absolutely ridiculous. It's a ridiculous argument. And like you said, I mean, every word has an etymology, a history, an evolution, where the word that we use today, its meaning today, wasn't what it was 200, 300, 400 years ago. It's speaking of homosexuals, the word fag and gay.
Yep.
Not too long ago, did not refer to homosexuals.
Right.
Even the word faggot. Faggot's a bundle of sticks, correct?
Yes. Yes.
You know? I mean,
words change the meaning, and all that's being asked here is that the definition of the word marriage be changed to include just any consenting adults, two consenting adults, regardless of gender. I think that's perfectly reasonable. But there were on a recent show, I can't remember the name of the individual, but he was advocating his opposition to homosexuality pretty strongly, and he was also pointing out that. I wish I had printed it out because I do not have the guy's name. But he was also pointing out that, since reproductively, same gender sex could never result in reproduction, procreation. Two men are never going to have a child if having sex with each other, and therefore it's wrong.
So there again, two people who are infertile that get married, and their sexual relations are never going to result in the birth of a child, so that means that they shouldn't be able to get married either. Or two people who are advanced in age and getting married later in life shouldn't get married because they're not going to have children. I mean, it's a stupid argument no matter how you place it. Not to mention, I believe that he called it the law of reproduction. And I'm like, what the hell law is that? I've never heard of the law of reproduction.
Yeah, you could check the, it's not even in the Bible. The law.
No.
I'm pretty sure that has something to do with the Catholic notion of natural law, which why would an atheist give a damn about Catholic notions of natural law? But in a sense, he's absolutely correct. If you're trying to have a baby, two guys, two girls getting it on, you're wasting your time. But who cares?
But that's not the only function of sex, because he was going on to try to make it seem like, you know, there's nothing there's nothing valuable about sex if it's not for procreation, which is complete and utter crap, because it's important in any intimate relationship, whether that be a heterosexual relationship or homosexual relationship. We have all kinds of sex, not for any other reason other than for pleasure and for feeling closer to our partners. So to say that it's somehow not, it somehow, because he was saying that it was completely selfish. I was like, I was just like, wow, really? So if you go out and have sex with a woman that you're dating, you know, and you don't want to have a kid, that's just completely selfish.
Or if you're wearing a condom.
According to that logic, that kind of sex, if it's not for procreation, that's automatically selfish. That is ridiculous. That's a totally ridiculous reason.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. Who cares? Back to the reproduction thing. Who gives a damn if you can't have a child as a result? Why make it illegal? Or why prevent people from getting married just because they can't have children?
Right.
It's absurd. Who is it hurting? It's not hurting a person. Now.
Well, they would say it contributes to the breakdown of the standard family unit and all. You know, I don't believe. I'm just saying that's the argument of many. Religious people,
and they were trying to make that argument too, saying something about the African way and how African culture just doesn't involve homosexuality, and homosexuality is European. So it was also very racist on top of it, basically saying that homosexuality is a white activity, that black people just didn't normally do that. So, and that didn't happen in black culture. And I'm like, really? Prove it. I just kind of wanted to go prove it, number one. Number two, I'm like, what culture are you talking about when you say African culture? Because African, if I'm, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, African cultures encompass all kinds of different groups of people. And every single one of them has a different culture and a different way they operate and a different way that their society is set up. And so to do this whole African culture thing just kind of baffles my mind because, I don't know if female circumcision originated in Africa, but I know that it's a big thing in Africa. And Is he okay with that? We're saying that, there's a sense of community. Well, a sense of community in Africa, too, was also polygamy. Is he okay with polygamy? I mean, it goes into this whole, do you even know your own history at that point? Do you even know what you're talking about when you say this? To me, it's so broad that they're just basically trying to justify the fact that they're disgusted with the idea of homosexuality, and they think that because they're disgusted with it, it justifies keeping people from being happy and getting to do what they, what they want to do with their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, and I agree with you 100%. Ultimately, I'm not a libertarian by any stretch of the imagination, but I have a lot of libertarian leanings when it comes to social issues, and I think that when it comes to preventing people from doing things that they want to do, you should have a really, really, really good reason. And I just don't see a good reason not to allow gay couples to get married. And if I did, I'd be opposed to it, but I just don't see it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you. You know what I think this episode should teach us is, free thinkers, whether we identify ourselves atheist, agnostic, whatever, is that it can be tempting to kind of have similar behavior as those in organized religion, in the sense that here's a guy, because I did watch that YouTube segment of the Black Atheists of Atlanta. Here we have a guy, or more than one guy, who are they're openly identifying themselves as atheists, but yet they tend to have a view that is, I would say, the minority view among free thinkers, because I would say, by and large, most free thinkers are, tend to be pretty liberal on the view when it comes to homosexuality. So I guess the point is, we don't want to fall into the frame of mind that says these people are free thinkers, they must be liberal on the view of homosexuality, because then if we fall into, if we have that kind of mindset, then we're no different from Christians or Muslims or whoever. We're just like a religion then. And I mean, many people say atheism or free thinking, that itself is a religion. I mean, no, it's not. I mean, we don't have a creed. However, if we start saying that, well, you must believe this, and if you're a free thinker, or you're not a true free thinker if you believe this, then, I don't see how we're any different from Christian fundamentalists. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think this guy is, I think his reasoning's ridiculous. I don't agree with him, but,
Well, it's like the no true Scotsman right. fallacy, that you're not really an atheist. All atheists believe that gay marriage is okay. You don't believe in gay marriage, therefore you're not a true atheist. And I agree with you. I don't doubt that this guy, these individuals are legitimately non-believers. And ultimately, this is just one area I disagree with him on. I might agree with him on every other issue.
Oh, yeah.
That I don't know. But it's something that stood out because, as like you said, it's not a point that you see being advocated by free thinkers on a regular basis. I think, like I said earlier, most non-believers, or at least are here to the libertarian principles in terms of social behavior,
sure.
that if it's not hurting anyone, let them do it.
Right.
And that's where I am.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I see that stereotype even within, our own groups and stuff. I think a lot of people automatically assume if you're atheist, you're liberal and, free and open with everything. And, not everybody's like that. I've actually been really happy to be in these groups and meet so many different people with so many different ideas and backgrounds and thoughts. And even if I don't agree with all of them, it's been kind of refreshing to be like, okay, so not everybody is, a pinko commie.
Right. Well, and you remember when we started the Godless Gun Wavers, which, if I remember correctly, was initially your idea, Jennifer. There were a couple of free thinkers, humanists, who found it offensive that we would advocate the use of guns, even recreationally, which is it's a common liberal mindset, and certainly there is a lot of division. I mean, there are a lot of people who are going to listen to the show who are going to be upset with us that we had anything positive to say about gun ownership. But, you know, if we're going to curb what we say so that we don't offend or upset anyone, we'll just sit here with dead air for an hour. So.
Right. Well, you know, and I'll tell you guys, I mean, in Marshall, you might have figured this out from being friends with me on Facebook, but on a lot of, you know, a lot of areas, I definitely would lean, you know, as I already said, I'm a libertarian. Yes, I'm a libertarian. I lean to the right on a lot of issues. You know, I remember a while back you had Robert Price on this podcast, and he's a self-proclaimed proud Republican. By the way, I'm skeptical. Even though I say I lean to the right libertarian, which is true, I'm skeptical and disgusted with both parties. So I
yeah. Sure. And I am too. I completely agree.
and I'm really an extremist on a lot of issues, either to the left or the right. If you were just to get my opinion on one or two views, you might think I was an arch liberal or an arch conservative. But I would describe myself ultimately as a left-leaning moderate, even though there's very few issues on which I'm actually moderate on.
Right.
Just the sum of my positions, that's where I would lie. But you know, when it comes to dealing with the free thinker community, if you start putting those expectations that they agree with you politically, you're going to have a very small group.
Right. Of people. Yeah, I mean, not just politics, but I'm sure we have all kinds of different views on a variety of subjects. I mean, it can be tempting sometimes even for me to fall into that mode of thought that say, to think others must adhere to what I believe, because I was so used to having that frame of mind when, as a fundamentalist Christian, where conformity is vital. Conformity is so important. You must believe the same thing pretty much in order to be part of the group. I mean, when you're joining a church, you have to sign a statement of faith saying you believe these things. You know, if you depart from anything in the statement of faith, you can't be a member. So it's, I must say it is liberating to not have that expectation that everyone must agree with me.
Yes. And I do like that. But also, to understand, like in a meetup group, a freethinker, atheist, skeptic meetup group, of which we have a whole bunch of them here in the Kansas City area, that you can't expect everyone to agree with you on every issue, and that you have to be tolerant of the fact that people are going to challenge you on your beliefs,
right?
And for good or bad.
I love being challenged. I mean, it's a fantasy of mine to eventually learn how to formally debate people. I love to be one of those people who debates, you know, William Lane Craig. And, you know, I love debate. I love being challenged. Mm-hmm. You know, I find it fun.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, it's also nice because it causes you to re-examine what you think. And I think that's important to always know, not just have opinions, but know why it is you think that way. And, you know, if you're never challenged, then I don't think you ever stop to think, well, why do I think this? And maybe somebody will bring up a point and you're like, I should research this. So I don't know. I see it as a good thing all the way around for debate and things like that.
And fortunately for most of the free thinkers I know, we most of us do understand that we can agree to disagree and not be enemies. That we're not going to hate each other based upon disagreement on a single issue. Well, depending on the issue. I mean, if I meet a free thinker who is advocating the return of slavery, I might have an issue with that, you know, or something like that. But on, you know, other issues where, you know, not to that extreme, I there's a couple guys in our free thinker groups that I disagree with almost on every issue. Nice guys. I don't have a problem with them.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We're going to talk about something that can't really be considered news. Because everybody knows it's already or didn't happen. The Harold Camping situation and his claims of rapture did not occur, as we all know, by virtue of the fact that we're talking about it. But I've been reading on a couple of locations that as we know, Harold, in the process of being wrong, raised a lot of money to spread just how wrong he is. With billboards, vans with bullhorns and things like that. They spent, I believe, millions of dollars promoting the rapture. Right. And that money came from the hapless, ignorant donors. And there's been some discussion about whether or not he could be sued for fraud because he knowingly duped people into donating their money.
Right.
Now, I'm personally of the opinion that he should not be liable for the money he received, which I assume he spent. I haven't seen the books. But he was very open about what made him believe the rapture was coming. He right. explained it very clearly.
Right.
The people who donated money did so after hearing his explanation and agreeing with it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. To prove fraud, you would actually have to prove that he actually thought, this isn't going to happen, but I'm going to dupe all these people out of their money. And I, quite honestly, listening to his interviews and things like that, I think he really thought this was really going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really don't, unfortunately, I think that there's really no recourse other than, well, just don't donate your money to some crazy nut job who says the world's going to end in a few months, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. You know, I don't know how familiar you are with Harold before, you know, all this hoopla found. They have radio stations throughout the country. I don't think there's a family radio affiliate in the Kansas City area, but there is one here in Chicago. And I never followed Harold in my religious days, but I did listen to him from time to time. And you're right, he never obviously asked people to donate. I mean, he always said it's up to the Lord. What you do with your money is up to the Lord. We're not going to tell you what to do. He'd always emphasize that this is a private decision. I mean, you know, no one forced these people to give money. And as you know, as Jennifer, as you're right, I mean, as crazy as Harold is, he really did believe this stuff. So I don't believe he knowingly committed fraud. And I don't see how any kind of lawsuit against him for fraud would stand a chance in court. I'd be surprised if it had a chance.
Well, and by allowing his victims, and most of them don't even consider themselves victims, most of them still agree with him.
Yeah.
But they are victims whether they're aware of it or not. But by allowing his victims to sue him for the money that they spent, and some of them spent a lot of money, by the way.
Some retired guy, used maybe all his life savings.
Yeah, $120,000 of his life savings. He's fucked right now.
Yeah.
But I think I don't think he regrets it.
No, he doesn't.
They interviewed him in Times Square on May 21st. He says, well, it's not going to happen. But, I mean, he was still very much a believer. That just goes to show you how the power of delusion on people.
Well, and what he would say when they asked him, what happened? He says, I don't know. The math was right. Because it's also based on this bizarre concept of biblical right. math and numerology.
Harold, I don't know if you guys know this. I mean, he graduated from a UC Berkeley with an engineering degree, so he has very much has a mathematical and engineering background, and I guess he applies that to his study of the Bible. You know, he's not a dumb guy. He's just crazy, but dumb.
No.
Right. Exactly.
It's like William Lane Craig, who you were talking about earlier. Genius, super genius, but deluded to the point of lunacy.
Right.
But anyway, one thing I was going to say is by allowing them to sue and forcing Harold to refund them their money, what that would effectively do is absolve them of their complicity in all of this, which is bullshit.
Yeah.
They were completely willing. I mean, except for the children who were forced by their parents to participate in this absurdity. And I read a number of stories about how horrible the lives of children were during this whole thing. Who parents spent their college fund and things like that, or drug them around cross country to promote this absurd belief. Broke up families.
Yeah.
Those individuals are just as complicit as Harold Camping, if not more so, because I've heard
they have blood on their hands as well.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is, it's their own blood in this situation, but they have no one to blame but themselves. At some point, you've got to use some critical thinking. You've got to say, you know, the stuff he says sounds really unlikely. Perhaps I'm going to disagree with him on this one. And they didn't. And they've got no one to blame but himself. It's not like he came up them with promises to, you know, offers to buy non-existent real estate and things like that and just scammed them out of their money. He told them up front everything he believed and everything he was doing.
Right.
He didn't lie about anything he did.
No.
Well, and maybe he did. I mean, it certainly is conceivable that he was making this up the entire time.
Well, I mean, it's possible, but doubtful. You know, and I'm not trying to defend Harold. I think he's a loon. But one thing that many people might not know about Harold is that he had a very lucrative construction business, which he eventually sold so he could devote his life full time to family radio. And he is a full-time volunteer. He does not take a salary. So he did not benefit financially from this. He's a full-time volunteer.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
And that just further evidence in his favor that there's just no way a lawsuit against him could possibly be successful.
No.
If those people want to sue someone, they should sue themselves.
Like you said, at some point, you've got to take responsibility for the choices that you make. And if you choose to give money to a cause, you know, if that cause turns out to be, unfortunately, you know,
stupid.
Messed up, not too or true or stupid, yeah, then, you know, you just kind of have to live with the fact that, well, you made a dumb decision, and hopefully it didn't destroy your life completely, and you can move on and learn from it. So,
hey, what do you guys think? I mean, I think about all the money. I didn't give as much money as these people, but I gave some money to the church, to the churches I was involved in. I realized that's a scam. Think I can get my money back from them?
Yeah, no, probably not. Yeah, it really is the same thing, because the only thing that Camping did that other Christians don't do, well, most other Christians throughout history, there have been plenty, is he was stupid enough to put a date on it. It's going to happen on this day, May 21st. That's outside of that, his teachings are fairly consistent with the normal fundamentalist Christian.
Yeah. Marshall, I'm glad you brought this up, but I mean, I'll try and, I don't want to spend, you know, too long on this, but, you know, what many Christians don't realize is that Harold and his followers, believe it or not, they follow the footsteps of Jesus more than your average evangelical church-going Christian here in America. And let me explain. You know, Jesus in the Gospels and Paul, their expectations, they clearly, implicitly and explicitly, the New Testament proclaims the end of the world within the first century, within the lifetime of the first followers of Jesus. And, you know, that's why in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you know, Jesus has all kinds of commands that only make sense in an apocalyptic context. Commands such as, you know, leave your home, leave your family behind, you know, sell all your possessions. And that's basically what the followers of Harold Camping did. As you said, you know, they went over the country. They gave away all their possessions. They spent all their money. I mean, these people, they conducted themselves as true followers of Jesus. And whereas, you know, I remember back in my religious days, I'd have people tell me, oh, Jesus is coming soon, but they have a nice fat savings account and they're planning a vacation from a year from now. So those people, they laugh at family radio, the family radio cult, but it's the family radio, of course, is Harold Camping's thing. But, you know, hey, I mean, these people, they were true Jesus followers, much more than average Joe Schmo evangelical Christian who attends a mega church in suburban America.
Exactly.
Yep.
No, I agree with you 100%. These, by and large, and I would include Harold Camping in this, were good people, but just did not possess an ounce of critical thought.
Right.
Just didn't. Just complete dupes. Yeah. Believed everything. I really believe that Harold Camping believed everything he said.
Oh, sure he did.
Absolutely.
And honestly, I think that there maybe there's something genetic, but I think that there are just some people who are predisposed to skepticism and some people who are predisposed to credulity. I really do, because I don't know what makes a person a skeptic and what makes a person, thoughtless, a person who allows other people to think for them.
Right. Well, you know, I mean... I have to question. I have to ask myself. I mean, yeah, what Harold believes and teaches is pretty crazy. But is it really that much crazier than what I believe?
No,
just days. I mean, I believe that someday the Superman figure, Jesus in Superman form, would come out of the sky and kill everyone who doesn't believe in him, and you know, to be this literal antichrist, and that there, it just all kinds of crazy shit. Now, you know what I think? Maybe the shit I believed was a lot crazier than what Harold teaches.
Like I said, the only difference between him and other Christians is he was stupid enough to put a date on it.
Right, right.
It's going to happen now. and that's really the only difference. That's all that separates him from all the other evangelicals and believers in the rapture. Right. So, and I really don't want to vilify him any more than already has, because he's just a deluded dupe.
Yeah,
but he was well intentioned. He really was. I don't doubt that for a second.
He thought he was doing a service for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. So, all right. Well, let's move from good people doing stupid things to bad people doing stupid things. Michael, since you're in Chicago, I don't know if you've been following the situation in the Kansas City area with. Good Father Sean Ratigan.
Yeah, I read that link. You linked to that article in the Kansas City Star. I did read that.
Just another example, for those of you out there listening, another example of a Catholic priest doing horrible, horrible, horrible things to children in full knowledge of his bishop and nothing happening to him. Yeah, this individual, I believe... almost certainly molested several young girls and took photographs of them in explicit sexual situations. And his bishop had, this has had been reported to the bishop routinely. They actually had in their possession the child pornography that he produced and distributed. He distributed it as well. And they knew this. They did nothing. They moved him to another location and tried to cover it up and hoped it would go away.
Yeah, did I read that the diocese is technically technically they were in possession of child pornography as a whole, the diocese as a whole, because not that they were, you know, using it for other purposes, but they were by concealing it that, you know, that's...
Well, they had confiscated it. They had confiscated it. There's some indications, some allegations that they even distributed it. There's no names attached. And that's just part of... That's what the plaintiffs are saying. I haven't seen the evidence for that. But they did have it in their possession. They had full knowledge of it, apparently, and did nothing. And amazingly... The fact that this still happens, and there was recently a big event in Philadelphia where a lot of Catholic priests were eventually turned over to the authorities for similar activity. But amazingly, the Catholic bishops got together to discuss once again, what are we going to do about these pedophile priests? And of course, you know, that effort's going to be hampered by the presence of pedophile bishops. Because I guarantee you, some of them are.
Sure. I believe it.
But they eventually decided to adopt Vatican norms, and this is per the Kansas City Star, released on Friday, reporting on it. They decided to go, let's go ahead and do what the Vatican recently put out and we are going to make, you know, child pornography and the abuse of the mentally disabled, we're going to say that's a no-no.
Really?
They're finally, they're taking a bold stand on the abuse of mentally disabled and child pornography. And they're saying the priest, they will turn them over to the authorities if they catch them doing that now. Which means that when the Vatican came out with that, they said, not necessary. Because the Vatican came out with that as Vatican norm, I believe a couple years ago. And they took a pass on including that into their own bylaws. So, I don't know. As I said in the last show, to an extent, this type of stuff really is no longer news because of the frequency with which it occurs. The horrific, horrific frequency with which it occurs. Yeah. But it's still news. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I actually, and Marshall, if you may have noticed on Facebook, I posted an article that is definitely connected to this. And I think in the world court, some lawyers, I don't think anything will come of this, but they filed charges. I think the charges are crimes against humanity, against the Pope. Mm-hmm. And one of the charges is for his role in covering up these sexual abuse scandals. Now, I don't know the details about whether he did play a significant role or not. I mean, I think I've read that there might be evidence he did. I mean, if...
Yeah, he did. Okay. I will say that for you.
Yeah, that's and this is the Pope. This is the Holy Father, you know. Yet how people can continue to see him as infallible. I mean, no, obviously no one's infallible, of course, yeah. But that's just a huge problem. It goes all the way to the top.
Speaking of going all the way to the top, recently, about a month or two ago, one of the Pope's top advisors on this very subject himself was arrested for pedophilia.
Wow.
Which, who knows what role that had in hampering the church's efforts to take this seriously, which I refuse to believe that they have taken it seriously, and anything that they've done to get this under control is merely for the sake of appearances, with the understanding that, well, now we can't openly tolerate kitty diddlers. People really frown on that nowadays. We got to put an end to that. So, Father Ricardo Sepia, 51-year-old parish priest. He was one of the top advisors to the Pope. My understanding is they met regularly to discuss how they were going to address the ongoing scandal, the ongoing situation regarding pedophile priests. And they caught him in a sting operation. The Italian equivalent of the FBI or something was recording his phone conversations. And here's a quote that one investigator released. "I do not want a 16-year-old boys, but younger. 14-year-olds are okay. Look for needy boys who have family issues." I mean, God.
Wow.
This is from the time.com, Time Magazine's online site.
I was just going to say, I suppose even though, I think it's absurd, like, to believe in Christian God and everything. I can understand why somebody would want to say, I still believe in God, but man, I am not going to be a Catholic anymore,
or something along
those lines, because it's quite obvious that their leadership is corrupt. Right. And maybe not on the local levels, because I do think that, while this is unfortunately happening all the time, I do think it's isolated. I don't think it's every priest is
sure.
Anything like that. And but I think large, most priests are probably good people.
Yeah, exactly.
Parish. And but how you could just I don't even know how these pastors could be like, man, is there some way we can like annex from the church and be our own thing,
But by according to actually a church release study indicated that the percentage of priest who engage in pedophilia and I forgot what the other term is. Pederasty. Pederasty is actually moderately higher than the general population, which would account for why this seems to be happening on such a regular basis. And other evidence has shown that it's just as likely to happen as in the Father Sean Radigan situation. Young girls are just as likely to be the victims as young boys. The Catholic Church attempted to spin this as a homosexual issue and tried tried to blame the whole thing on homosexuality, but that is absolutely not true. A couple of reasons that young boys were targeted is at 50% by an all-male clergy is in part due to the fact that that's who the priest had contact with. For a very long time, Catholic girls could not be altar servants, and Catholic priests really had very limited access to young girls. But they had plenty of access to the young boys who they dealt with all the time. So, but anyway, the scandal continues. As I have a Catholic friend, as I mentioned before, he always points out, it happens in every segment of society. There are pedophiles everywhere. And he's true. But that's, again, ignoring what the concern is here.
Right.
Well, I was going to say, that's true. But, if a teacher gets caught molesting a student, the school district doesn't then send him to another school district to cover it up. He gets reported and he gets to go to jail. And most likely he or she loses their job and doesn't ever get to teach again.
Well, if the principal or the school administrator covers up the incident, then that administrator gets fired.
Exactly.
And possibly goes to jail for his involvement in the cover-up of child abuse.
Right. They're complicit. They're complicit in the crime, basically.
And that's what needs to happen to this bishop in Kansas City. His complicity is failure to get this guy to the authorities, to report this to the authorities, and to take any legitimate steps to prevent it from happening again, to me, is a crime. I mean, technically, it is a crime. He aided and abetted. Now, he probably said, stop doing that until the situation goes away. But he didn't take the actions that he should have taken as his boss, as an individual who knew what was going on and had an obligation to his community to protect them. That bishop, probably just as much as the pedophile priest, needs to go to jail.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
I agree.
So, well, anyway, I had a bunch of other stories, but we've kind of gone on for quite a while, so we're going to wrap this thing up. Okay. Unless either one of you had anything to say really quick.
I've enjoyed the discussion.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. So, all right, Michael, Jennifer, thanks for being on the show. And everyone out there in internet land, thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye-bye.